December 25, 2021, it's the Walt Pedro Show. Pedro Show. Happy Saturday, Merry X. What child is this? Also known as Greensleeves, live at Village Vanguard, 1961. John Coltrane started the show. You sanding shit over there? And then we had Lanyard with Lee's Basement, live 97. You could tell by that sand and wherever the fuck that was. I am not man alone, people, because those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got with me Michael Ballard. How you doing? Michael Barker.
I'm there, sorry. You go.
Now, Mr. Ballard's a similar guy, but wrote crazy stories. Fuck it.
Awesome.
My name gets fucked up all the time, too. Look. Who can we give credit for the connect to?
Gruff.
That's right. No, we can't say that. Brutal Sound Effects Group.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Brutal Sound Effects, yes.
Right. He shall not be named, except he was. Okay.
My bad. Well.
No, it ain't. It's okay. Like they say in the courtroom, you can't unring the bell. So, interested in your journey through music, please bring your, whatever earliest musical memory you still retain.
Oh, man. The story my mother likes to tell is that I saw Elvis in the womb, but I don't recall that one. Mostly
that's her favorite memory.
It is her favorite memory. Yeah, it might have been a weird time. Summer of 76. I don't know how good that show was, but...
I graduated in June of 76 from San Pedro High School at George E. and D. Boone.
Sweet.
Well, I wasn't in charge of that. I guess I could have failed, but... It's just my time, and So, where in the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
No, there wasn't. There was not.
And go ahead.
I mean, I mostly remember like 8-tracks and 45s and some LPs.
That was yours?
No, they were my parents. That's
okay,
my first...
okay. Because I was an 8-track guy. Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You're talking
not, yeah.
70s and stuff. Yeah, it was the Columbia House, right? You give them a dime, they give you 10 of them, they send you one a month. If you don't send it back, you got to buy it.
No, I definitely got that with CDs.
Yeah. I remember when Thurston made me get a CD player sometime in the late 80s. He said, what? You got to get one of these. Okay. The pewters in the 90s could play it, so fuck the CD. Anyway, back to your thing. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
First record I bought, I feel like it was a Surf Punk cassette in Baltimore and Inner Harbor, Sam Goody. I don't remember that. I don't know why. I think I just like the cover.
My Beach, My Wave, Go Home, cat. Shit like that. Yeah. I shared a stage once with those cats.
Oh, man. I
think
can't
they were Malibu punk. And one guy left the band, and he invented cowpunk, right? Scott Goddard. He was Scott Cowpunk Goddard. It was kind of... Well, they were new wave, right? And actually, I think one of the dudes was the Captain Tennille brothers.
Yeah, my God. I have no idea.
right.
I mean, I'm picking records from the cover, so.
Yeah, but when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money, so that's why I asked that question.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. And then the first gig you saw, Michael.
First gig I saw was 1983 Michael Jackson Thriller Tour.
Oh, yeah.
It was ridiculous.
I wish I could have saw that.
It was a bit epic.
Did he do the big fucking creep out dance with the Thriller song? And
I kind of remember we were pretty far away. It was RFK Stadium.
Oh, yeah. D.C.
With my mom. Yeah. So
I played there once. Yeah, the fucking stage was bigger than most clubs I played. I played there and the fucking Sandman walked away after the first few seconds. I was like, you motherfucker. Right. It was one of those pay-to-play radio jive phones.
It's a festival thing?
So, yeah, something. But one good thing about that gig was I got to talk with Joey Ramone backstage, and he was very cool people. He said punk was like a hay wagon, and if you had something, jump on board.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was. And when we played, I remember Chris Kirkwood from the Meat Puppets dressed as a jester. With a banjo and no mic, right? He's up there. Okay. He's Marceau-ing it. So, what about at school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No, I wasn't.
It's okay. I wasn't either.
Yeah, I wasn't. I don't think I could pay attention enough to sit through it. But yeah, I wasn't.
Well, marching band, you probably didn't sit through it so much.
No, true.
Although you might want to, because, you know, especially summertime in those wool suits. Fuck.
Oh, man, no thanks.
I know, the horror. We would dress like pirates, right? Pedro was called the pirate, so we dressed like pirates. And we got calm weather anyway. But so what about the after-school thing? Not graduate, but in the afternoon, like garage band, basement band, bedroom band?
Yeah, at the end of high school, that's when I started, probably like 11th grade, somewhere between 10th and 11th grade, I started playing bass.
Bass?
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
That's my instrument. Why? Because everyone else I knew, I think, played guitar at the time.
So you could get a gig easy.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that goes way back. That goes fucking... Only James Jamerson, he came from stand-up. Everybody else was guitar guys to find work. Joe Osborne, Carol Kay. Yeah.
Right on.
Even Paul McCartney, right? The guy quits. Right? It's John Lennon's friend. And that's what I thought bass was when I learned, you know, when Dee Boone's mom put me on. Oh, this is where you put the retarded friend. It's like right field in Little League. So, you know, I'm a little prejudiced towards this machine. So, what was your first one?
My first bass was my grandparents, bought it for me. It was a red Yamaha. It was ridiculous. I don't remember exactly after it. I had it for a year, and then, like, one summer I saved up enough money to buy, like, Mexican Fender Jazz bass. Oh. And that's still what I have.
Yeah. What kind of amp did you first get?
First amp probably was one of those awful crates.
Yeah, bass players always have to start off with these little amps where the drummer just beats the shit out of you. Right?
Yeah,
and then when you get a big enough amp to get over the drums, then the guitar player has to blast over you.
Yeah, and it's just a constant battle.
So what about the learning thing? Were you self-taught? How'd you do it? Off records?
At first, I had friends that would sort of sit down and kind of like lend a hand as kind of teach me some concepts when I was young. When I first started, I tried lessons for a bit, but the teacher was kind of a dick, and I kind of just didn't want to keep doing it. He just seemed miserable, and I was like, this is totally not fun.
I think that's a big problem with a lot of lessons. It's the teacher. It's not really the idea of lessons. It's, man... maybe this cat should find another fucking job.
Right, yeah, just definitely a miserable dude, which was not helping at that age. You just sort of need some positive reinforcement, and you get deep into it.
Absolutely. With nurture, right?
Yeah, and then from there it was like self-taught, and then later on I started taking different lessons throughout the years, but all it's sort of short-lived, mostly like people that I wanted to like learn from a bit.
Well, like I asked you, garage band, basement band, bedroom band?
Well, first it was like just doing like bad covers of what was on the radio that my friends wanted to play. And that's kind of how I learned to play.
Too. I learned off records too. But whose pad? Was it the drummer's pad?
It was.
Yeah, the drummer's pad. I didn't want to move that shit all the time.
Exactly.
Right. The guy in the rear with lots of gear. That was a big mistake. Miniman should never put George Hurley in the back. He should. Last 20 years, I've always had my drummers up front. Get out of denial, people. It's rhythm music. In fact, let me ask you this question, Michael. Four-string guitar or four-string drum set?
Four-string drum set.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what it is. You know, and these people talking all these chords and harmonics on the bass. I mean, there's a little bit of that, but really, we're doing little fucking drum patterns.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. When did you get hip to that? It took me fucking all half a lifetime.
I'm with you. I'm still right there behind.
Right. But you know what? I've been reading this Lewis Porter bio on John Coltrane to Peter DeSefno half chapter of time, and he always saw himself as a student, so fucking John Coltrane can say that. It's okay. So did these bands ever do gigs?
I think... The first thing I was in, I probably played some high school, like, event. And then from there, we never really did anything. But
what was the event like? That's your first gig, right?
It was the weirdest, like, in a cafeteria, like, super bright lights. You know, like, this the horrible, like, cafeteria lights.
Did they throw cafeteria chow at you?
I feel like we were a few minutes away from that.
Okay. So would you call it a success?
I think looking back at it now, sure, it was a success. I mean, I got up there and did it. I was a terrible player, but I, for some reason I thought it would be a good idea.
Were you afraid?
Get up and do it. Oh, hell yeah.
I did a gig. Me and D. Boone did a gig, Bright Orange Band in 10th grade, and D. Boone's pop had to literally drive the pickup truck up to the stage, and we jumped in because they're throwing rocks and shit as, you know, and like hardly anybody has these nightmares. I had this shit in Minuteman and Firehose, my solo band, Nels Klein getting hit with dirt clods opening for Primus, you know, backward baseball hat guys, yeah.
Definitely.
But and then use condoms and cups of piss, sacks of shit.
Jesus Christ.
All through the years, but people on the show, hardly anybody has this shit. I'll tell you what the worst, though, was fucking batteries. They hurt.
Yeah, it's a Philadelphia thing, for sure.
I think I got hit in Chicago. They were putting cigarette things out in Cabaret Metro, right? And Hank's back. Me and Georgie had to peel them off the deck. You gave me this deviled eggs. I, girl, in the Ritz. I'm on a
plane. Yeah, yeah.
Figure where your brain's at. Slow-mo. Thank you. Again, do the streets move quick around you? I'm not going to call you. I might not call. I'm not going to call you. I might not call. Not going to call you. I might not call. I'm not going to call you. I might not call.
Some other town. So he's sitting there with all this other family around the table with all the candles lit, eating turkey or ham or whatever, and Mama's feeling real down. No tree for Mama. No tree for Mama this year. No money for toys. No money for presents. Daddy's done wasted all his cheer. Think I'll have a beer. Happy time of year, Christmas. Christmas and Happy New Year. So if your mama and papa are sitting at the same table, get a good picture of it in your brain. You may need it later on. No tree for Mama. No tree for Mama this year. Uh-uh. No spruce, no cedar, no pine, no balsa. Not even a spray-on scent out of the box from Peoples. No way. If I'd have known it, I'd have got her one myself and sent it on down parcel post. Now she's going to have to visit the future Christmas ghost. And Daddy, meanwhile, is watching some other kids smile because Christmas is somewhere else this year. No tree for Mama. Uh-uh. No tree for Mama this year. No oranges and nuts and stockings and holly all over. It's gone somewhere else this year. Happy New Year. I don't want to depress you or anything. Just telling it like it is. When you're the son of a truck driving son of a bitch, almost anything can happen. Daddy's taught Sunday school for years and years, and I thought he knew what he was talking about. Always came out in order. Always came out in order. Always came out in order. Not this year. Scripture's clear this time. There's no room for Mama at Daddy's manger. Clear sign of impending family danger. No tree. No tree for Mama. No Santa Claus for Mama. Christmas for Mama this year. Wrap it up, boys. Real happy now.
Thank you. It's Christmas time once again. So let's get together with the ones we love. Everywhere you go, decorations fill the atmosphere. And it makes me feel like I belong. I'm so happy that you are here for Christmas Day. I'm so happy that you are here. Thank you.
show, that chunk of music started off with the Deviled Eggs with I Girl at the Ritz. And then Bombas Prandon from D.C. area. No Tree for Mama this year. Mold Omen, Swing Baby, Jesus Swing. They're Baltimore Mold Omen. Healers, Hark the Herald Angels Sing. You can tell there's a little theme going on here, people. And Crane with Christmas Time. Finally, Hello Duo, live at the Red Room. We got to give a shout out to Brother Bill Nace because Michael here is talking from the town he's living in. And we're just rapping about a couple times I played there, Johnny Brennan's Enlightenment. Michael, you helped make that happen.
Yeah, I had a part-time job as like a laborer. I forget when. I was half the week I was doing some voiceover recording, other half the week I was destroying my body at that place. But yeah, me and another dude demoed the entire place, the top floor. Went in there,
right, because it was like a tale for old drunks or something?
Yeah, for a bit, yeah.
And then they knocked out the overhead. They made it taller and stuff. It's a very unique venue, people. They look down on you when you're playing. It's trippy, like a Shakespeare thing. Yeah. Now, speaking about building stages and shit, when Dick Lloyd, the television guitar, he said he designed and built that stage at CBGB. So I got two builders that's been on the show that I'm very indebted to. Thank you so much. So learn me about some of the stuff you gave me. You know, I did the order you sent them in, so I don't know the exact sequence. What's Lanyard?
Lanyard is, a quartet of people from Maryland and some in Pennsylvania. So that was, like, the first band I played in. None of that was mostly playing other people.
Yeah, off-air people, I got to tell the listeners. Off-air, Michael's originally from Baltimore. Go ahead. So Lanyard, that's a good. We used to make lanyards right out of this plastic strips. They were keychain fucking dongs.
Yeah,
that's what I know.
We needed a name, and we looked in it. We did that whole dictionary move where you opened the dictionary up and pointed at something. We did that a couple times, and I guess we weren't feeling super creative, so we stuck with it.
Okay. Deviled Eggs.
Deviled Eggs is a band that I joined. They were a trio. And I sort of joined it a little later. It was Wes Matthew and Tom Borum and John Pace. And I joined it, like, after they put out a bunch of cassettes. I don't know if I can say, like, I ruined the band, but no, the first cassettes were awesome. And I was psyched to get to play with them because I went to high school with them. And, we played with Baltimore.
You knew about them already playing, right?
Yeah, we would play with them with Lanyard. And, like, I would come back from college back to Baltimore to...
But you caught them at the wrong time of their arc?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe. I mean, toward the end of the band. But,
no, but that happens, you know? You can't.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like graduating Pedro High in 76, right? And what about Hello Duo?
Hello Duo is me and Dan Breen did a duo at the Red Room. I mean, a lot of these are live because, I mean, we did a lot of, like, playing shows and playing with people. We never really did proper recordings, so... I have a handful of live stuff. So that was me and Dan Breen. It was just two upright basses, just free improvised.
Yeah.
Show.
Oh, so you moved from electric bass to upright?
Yeah. It was a lot of.
Okay, when that happened?
That happened around. What was I? Probably 19, I think. So.
Still kind of young.
Yeah, and still young.
And where did you get one? I mean, they're fucking expensive.
Oh, you know, that's a great story. I went to a hockey game and got predatory lended a credit card by MBNA. So, you know, at 17 years old, 18, you know, like a $25,000 credit limit, which I had no idea. But anyway, I bought a $1,500 bass at a guitar show. And, I felt like, you know, I was like, oh, who am I? But, because I wanted to learn it. We were driving to New York a lot and seeing a lot of shows at the Knitting Factory, and it was just...
Oh, the one on Houston or the one on Leonard?
On Leonard.
Okay. I saw William Parker, speaking of double bass, solo testament.
Houston awesome.
Went in. It was sweaty, but he was bad. Man, yeah, did you find it hard to play? I tried for a couple
absolutely,
years.
Yes, absolutely. Until, it
killed me.
The bad bass, it's the thing. It's like it's difficult because like you buy a cheap bass, they're harder to play, and then you sort of learn how to like get the action to be the sort of lower so you can kind of really... get into it. Otherwise, it's really hard.
Yeah, it's like running in the sand. And the critical thing is the sound post. I found out I had a plywood K1 for a couple of years. I even made a Kill Rockstar single just to make myself learn it. But it was killing my hand. It was like, what? You're going to have to stop.
And
then I seen these, you know, Mr. Ray Brown, Cecil McBee, and these guys are rocking it.
Yeah.
God damn. Oh, man. And do you still have it?
I don't have that one. And I did have another one, but I'm in between bases at the moment, so... Which is unfortunate because I really need to get back into.
But you still got that old electric one, right?
Yeah, yeah, and that's mostly what I've been playing.
It's a jazz, MIM jazz, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've played a bunch of good bands. You know, there's something about a Fender, right? There's something if you don't set them up right, they're bunk, but they're pretty consistent.
Yeah, I mean, I beat the hell out of this one, so it's a bit torqued a bit. So, but it's still it's yeah. At it. Forever,
Leo had
so.
It. You know, the guy never even played one, but man, he did it. You know why it's called precision, right? Well, jazz is later, but precision because it had frets. Okay, people, it's the end of the first hour. Christmas 2021, just Watt Pedro Show. Special guest Michael Barker. Hold tight for hour two. December 25, 2021, second hour, Watt Pedro Show.
Thank you. I said, don't let no one think pussy or linky is about me, yeah? Because it's how I feel.
Thank you.
Ranger. So start out the second hour with Blake, Pancake, S-Ball, Barker doing Live High Zero Festival 2002. I'm assuming this was live too.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. And then we had Crushed by Pimps, brand new recording over from England, Makes You Think, the Ivory Mix. A brand new record from Primitive Ignorant, Amaya, then Helvetia from their new album, Crooks Go in the Ground, and finally, Sharks with Wings, with Cornish Game Hens / Gateway Music. That's a trip. Those are putting two things together that usually don't go. But
yeah,
that's what songs are for, people. That's why we all got to be not just players, but composers. So enlighten me to this four-way, the Blake Pancake Festival, Mark.
Yeah, and that's the High Zero Festival that's going on for probably 20-some years now in Baltimore, where they put random people to improvise, and it's sort of a multi-day concert.
You're a boy there, right? Do you remember a pad downtown called Marble Bar? Marble Bar?
Marble Bar, no.
Because that's a Black Flag played there, man. It was a heavy part near Fells Point. It's a heavy part of town. And I think it was. My memory's bad. Okay, tell me about this festival. And what? This wasn't a band, right? It was a...
No, this is just a one-off. This is just sort of like a good documentation of like the improvising with bass that I was doing at that time.
And you know, I had an improviser, Gino Robert, on yesterday, and we were talking about this idea that improvising is like composing in the moment.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me your thoughts on that.
I mean, it's nice to be in the moment and kind of spontaneously make. I mean, there's lots of issues with it. Sometimes people just play within their train tracks, and there's a bunch of different directions happening at once. And a lot of times, there's a lot of listening, but the spontaneity of it is what's really fun for me.
Is there ever a dilemma, like who goes first?
Sometimes, but honestly, I think people just have at it. Like, yeah, I mean, I was terrified at this show. Like, it was terrifying to me to do something that I was doing in, like, with small groups, to be all of a sudden play this concert with, I don't know, it wasn't a ton of people, but...
But have you played with these cats before?
I played with Helena, the cellist, a bunch, and I have done some improvising with Catherine Pancake as well.
But never in this kind of lineup, so, yeah, okay. Kind of, but, you know, Hodge, when I was doing my first stop with the drummer man, said, why, you know, be, and I told him I was scared, you know, his pants shit in a peak analog. He said, look, Watt, being a little bit scared is like being a little bit excited.
Let's get the adrenaline buzz for sure.
You're into that? Okay.
I mean, I'm not into it, but you see it afterwards, and you're like, okay, maybe I am into that. So.
Well, you see some dudes, they're so cocksure, like they were born to do it.
Definitely not.
I just wanted to be with my friend. You know, I wanted to be with D. Boone, and this all this happened to me. It was like always having to get up in front of the class and read a report, you know. You pissed your pants, you got a hard on, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Okay, look, Royal Majestic, this is a name for a prize. Coral Reef discovers my hull, that, you know, my pop being a sailor, I love this. Let's listen. You know, Philly used to be a Navy town. Show that chunk of music, Royal Majestic with Coral Reef Discovers My Hull. Could mean a lot of stuff. And then Organs out of Ireland, brand new release from them, Furious Return. Ray Shin with Teddy Down at the Dinghy. And then George Steel Toe Ensemble with Untitled Number 2. Enlighten us, Michael.
So, yeah, the Royal Majestic is just solo, like a solo-based project that I just made up a name for at the time. I think I can't even remember exactly where I was. I think it was in between Baltimore and Philadelphia when I was making that. And
like, I'm going to make a one-man band. I think the best name would be Royal Majestic.
Yeah.
Because it's a humble thing.
Yeah, super humble. I think it was a nickname a friend was... kept saying, I think because my middle name is Roy, and calling me Roy was
okay.
a joke.
Okay,
and then somehow, some way, we got it to that.
Because in a way, it's a double superlative, you know, like assless chaps. I mean, what other kind are
there?
Ain't as good as jumbo shrimp, but, you know, stuff. somewhere in there. And so now, what is this? Is it like four track, or you use a pewter, or?
I was actually, that's just like a single take of. I just had like one of those old, I think it's DOD, like blue loop box guys.
Yeah.
And it was just me upright bass playing through like big muff pedal and just kind of making like a drone. And then I think, if I remember it right, yeah. And then there's like some, a lot of like fun with harmonics situation at the end.
You know, the what about bass with fuzz boxes? You lose the low end a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're working on ways. I feel like nowadays they have like a. They're designing the circuits to be able to keep the low end in. But
like a blend.
Yeah, but back, you know, with that old being Big Muff, now I cut all the bass out.
Right, right.
That's total mid range wash, which is cool. It was nice.
Well, you know what cats used to do in the old days? They'd run two amps, one with the fuzz box, one with that.
Ah, yeah. Brilliant.
Then that's more shit to schlep.
I know. That's the whole story of this.
No, it's getting better, though, these Class D amps. I got these boxes from Brighton, this company, Bareface, 1,200 watts, 40 pounds.
That's awesome.
In Massachusetts is Bergantino amp, 1,200 watts, 6 pounds.
Damn.
I know. I can't do that with the drum set yet, but. Okay, so, and like, you just improvised in the moment, right? Do you make demos, or?
No, that's improvised in the moment. Normally, it's like, with digital, it's sort of like you can just play and sort of kind of go back and go through. It's not like you're burning through tape or it's costing money.
Same with the pictures, right? You don't
have
to develop film, buy film. Yeah.
Yeah, you can shoot at will and kind of like edit later and go through it. So it's not as precious.
You're right. And there's a different aesthetic, of course. Okay, George Steel Toe Ensemble.
Yeah, George Steel Toe is a group that Brian Osborne and Jay Dunbar made together. I think I could be doing it wrong, but yes, I met them at a show in Philly around 2005, and then we just sort of got along and had similar aesthetics, so we just started hanging out and traveling up to New York, me and the guys from Sharks with Wings, which is Tom Clark and Mark Zajac. And we
gave you some Sharks with Wings. You gave me some Sharks with Wings.
Yes,
we played it last chunk of music, and like an idiot, I forgot to ask you about it.
Yeah, that's no worries. It's a trio of Mark, Tom, and I, and that was something we played for a bunch of years. And yeah, we did everything from free improvising to just sort of doing like pieces like that, where we just sort of blend a bunch of ideas. You know, we joke around like or call it part music at some point, but.
Part music?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we're going to play this part, and then we're going to play that part, and then we're going to do another part, you know, and it's just
too
more
literal,
like,
Michael, too literal.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's really good. Of course, you know, what did Popeye say? I am what I am. I mean, fuck. Right?
Exactly.
The Bush told Moses that.
So, George Steel Toe starts with Wings Trio, and then Brian and Jay. Brian is a drummer, and Jay played bass, and...
What, two basses?
We had saxophone. Yeah. Well, we played all sorts of different stuff.
Oh, you trade off?
Yeah, we trade, like, sometimes it'd be two basses, sometimes it'd be someone would take electronics, sometimes somebody would play guitar, and that was just, Brian had booked time at a studio in, like, Williamsburg, I forget the name of it. And we just recorded for a whole day. And then he put out a record of one weekend of recording is on one side. The other side is like another ensemble on the other side. So
I-95, 100 miles, Philly, New York City. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, people. Christmas 2021. This is what Pedro Show special guest, Michael Barker. Hold tight for hour 3. December 25, 2021. It's the third hour of the Walk from Pedro Show.
Make sure it's me.
Pete Rose Show. Start off the third hour with Embarker. Oh, I see the connect here. Kind of like the Roy middle name thing. Fuck
yeah,
Jesse,
I'm not
Power. Then the Ratchet Orchestra out of Montreal live. It's Thrust, but they got the H in parentheses. So fuck you, lost a watch. Mike Adams is on his way with Sunrise. And finally, number two tour tape, Hatchers. Enlighten us, Michael.
Yeah, fuck Jesse Powers. Just the first song off of an LP I put out. Jesse Powers basically a cat killer that
right.
bothered me. At some point, apparently, I had to name a song after it. But and that's just me solo, my punny name. And
pun rock. That's a pun rock band. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just all electronics that, you know, that project's been mostly electronics.
Let's talk about this. The migration from bass to electronics.
Yeah, I think it was through, like, the improvising and different people I was playing with, like Charles Cohen and a few other people, and just sort of being around a lot of electronics. And, I mean, my dad and I built a Paya theremin kit when I was, like, 18. You know, I saw, like, John Spencer play and was sort of enamored with it, not necessarily the Led Zeppelin version, but the gimmick. And so we built one, and that's kind of, like, my gateway into electronic music.
I think the most popular use was Good Vibration, right?
For sure.
And I think that took
Star Trek theme.
Kind of a gimmick, but man, and I think it took some skill. There was two ladies that was proteges of that Mr.
For sure, Clara Rockmore. I mean,
yeah, that's right. I played. Hank Rollins gave me some of her stuff, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, this one, the volume antenna didn't really work the way it should work, so there was no way I was playing this thing as if it was a stringed instrument. It was more of a noise making device at the time. So.
And your pop helped you build it.
Yeah, my dad. Well, he took it to work, and a guy at work taught my beginning into like anything with electronics, and so he helped build and basically showed me a little bit on how to, solder then. But I didn't stick with it. It was a little bit too tedious for me at that age. But later on in life, I definitely started doing a little bit more small electronics projects. But at the time, it was interesting.
And you were building devices to make not really to work with a bass guitar, but on their own?
Yeah, on their own, yeah.
And not keyboard shit, right?
Not keyboard shit. I mean, occasionally, I got into circuit bending for a while. Like, you know, in between jobs during that Johnny Brendan's time, I would circuit bend something and sell it on eBay to help pay for rent and whatnot. But because, yeah, for stores, you could get tons of stuff at the time before it really was picked through. I spent a lot of time for stores. Collect a lot of answering machine tapes, but, yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Repurpose it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I put out Twig and Carly put out a recording I did of, I used to drive around delivering AV stuff, and for like 5 years I collected these, I collected the answering machine tapes, and I made a compilation out of like a couple hundred that I had gathered, and they put it out like a CDR out of it, and it was pretty great.
Okay,
yeah, that was a lot of, yes, Hatchers, fuck, sorry.
No.
Anyway.
Continue. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's quite a concept. So these were people's own fucking answering machine shit?
Yeah. And some of them were like messages people left. Sometimes, you know how like when you didn't pick up in time, it would record your, and that those were the, there's some classic stuff there.
I know you're there, you motherfucker. Pick up the phone.
Exactly.
Right, because answer machines were actually people buffers.
Yeah, I mean, they don't, you can't find those tapes anymore. They're all gone. Everything went digital.
Yeah, yeah. The buffer. Okay, Hatchers.
Hatchers is the current project with Brian Osborne and I, the drummer from Steel Toe. And that is like me on electronics and him on drums. And it's basically like, you know, free improvising, not always free improvised, but mostly free improvised, usually higher energy, but I think one of these tracks is not.
Speaking of Philly drummers, you know Jason from Bardo Pond?
Yeah, yeah, Jason, for sure.
Right. I think he was helping Hot Snakes when I met him.
He
had braided ponytails. Does he still have it?
I think he does. That's the last time I saw him.
I mean, that's a tangent. You gave me this Embarker, so it looks like your proj collabing with somebody.
Yeah, that's the one. That and Hatchers are the ones that are currently
okay,
on.
Okay, okay. Let's play Driving in Tampa.
J'ai perdu l'idée, j'ai perdu ma carte. Attends-le, attends-le. When you read Gravity's Rainbow, they talk about how paranoia is this state of thinking everything is like connected, or like seeing connections where maybe there aren't any. It's just like, I always see that, and I just want to always make that connection. Just the bridging of like different discourses to each other. Materials themselves can be pretty inspiring. For instance, like this project just came out of the fact that I had access to spare piano parts. How can I make something with them? So it's just like me exploring the properties, or like the limitations or the edges, the boundaries, or how far I can push this medium and what its capabilities are. The advantage of using sound over visuals is that, you know, visuals almost always have like a reference. Like, you look at anything and then there's always going to be like a slew of associations with it, like cultural baggage. I know what kind of emotion this is supposed to elicit. Or with sound, I think there's a little bit more unexplored territory and freedom in sound. I try to think about creating a space where you don't know how to enter the sound necessarily, and how to approach it and enjoy it or hate it even. I think in these kinds of moments of confusion, not knowing or not thinking, I think that's really great. Be the other one. Sound is invisible, but it's very tangible. Sound dissipates. It doesn't really exist. Like, so sound can only exist in a social context. Sound is just such a mysterious, cool fucking medium to work in. Yeah. I love novelty and discovery. For instance, taking the bare piano wire and marrying it with a bow, or marrying it with, you know, a mallet or something like that, and then like getting unexpected results. Like, that is such a great feeling. It's just like you're discovering something, like you're doing something new for the first time. I guess that's like the kind of attitude I wish people would take into just doing things. It's like doing things for the sake of just having something new happen, something, just doing something, instead of having it fulfill some sort of function. Down a little. Art should not be instrumental or like have a direct function, you know, when you're like, oh, this is my job, like I don't want to veer off course, like I want to do what I intended to do. I think it comes from this like capitalistic drive that like I frame everything in what this is valued at, what it's worth, right? So it's like important to do stuff that is not worth anything. Like, what is the intention of art? It's kind of like beautiful that it's like so open-ended like that. We'll be right back.
Watch for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Start off with Embarker Newton with Driving in Tampa live at Cyborg City. And which is probably a venue that might have played you. Zone Infini from their new record, Atomize. Hatchers again with Continua. Victoria Shan is somebody that Brutal Sound Effects people, crew, turned me on to. The Den record EP3. And finally, Embarker, Isolation Synonym. Okay, so we know a little about Embarker, but what's Embarker with Newton?
Embarker with Newton, that was just Matt Raymond and I were friends for a while, and we would do a lot of, we play together here and there, but we were doing a tour down to INC in Miami, and we just happened to play that night together. We had a decent recording of it, and that's kind of the story of that track.
So it was just a tour band?
Yeah, for that one, yeah.
Okay. And then some more Hatchers. And what's the difference between this and Number 2 tour tape and Continua?
Continua is just like a more subtle, like a newer track. The other one was in the earlier days of our existence, so it was a little bit more freewheeling. And I guess
was it from tour?
It was like a bunch of rehearsals from before the tour. Something new to take on tour to sell.
Sure.
Okay. You know, like a handful, like maybe like 20 home dubbed
situations. What do they call that? Merch.
Yeah, exactly. You got to do something. We're trying to
something to sling.
Yeah, remember then, that you went to the event, so yeah.
Right. And also, I think it's people thinking, man, I can help these cats out if I do this. Because, you know, maybe the promoter, and they're not getting any part of the bar, so I can help them. And this Embarker here, you say this is the current proj.
Yeah, that's what I've been mostly doing. That record, that's a track of a record I worked on that I think I ended up releasing just right into the pandemic, but which is unfortunate because I was going to do a tour right there at the end.
Well, you
right,
get right through there. Just postpone it. It'll come.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find on the website, sendhelp.org.
People, sendhelp.org.
Yep, and there's a Bandcamp, which is embarker.bandcamp.
Well, you probably got links at that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
right. And so, it's been 2 years since this situation has been. So have you done anything in the meantime?
I've only played a couple of outdoor shows that my friend Eugene organized in this courtyard here in North Philly. We did some shows in quad sound, just but everyone could be outside and sort of like walk around the space.
But what about compose and record? Are you doing that also?
Yeah, I've been working on a bunch of new Embarker tracks, I suppose that's what you call them. And yeah, I've actually been like working on some bass, playing bass a little bit and writing some songs, but I have no idea
You been doing this electronics, you kind of put the bass on the back burner?
Well, I mean, I still play it, but it's as far as like making something with it that I, you know, I'm not going to go out and play like a solo electric bass show.
Like you were saying, Florida, Jaco Pastorius.
Yeah.
One time exactly. I conked at his brother's pad in Melbourne, Florida. Man, that was a trip.
I can imagine.
I should have been doing diaries back then because this was a night you would not fucking believe. You could tell, there's something in the family. By the way, Robert got the bass back and gave it to the family, by the way. But yeah, solo bass, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, if it could be bass for bass, the thing is, I see it being trying to be a fake guitar or fake, you know, whatever. If it did just bass, you know, like we lost the fake cat Robbie Shakespeare, right? That's bass.
Exactly.
You know, this thing where you play billion notes with 10 strings, I don't know. It's like Halloween, you know. You're wearing somebody else's clothes, dude. Maybe one day a year. Yeah. When you get your new stuff, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Michael. People, it's been the Christmas edition of Watt Pedro Show 2021. Keep your batter dry.